we've been talking about kind of a Christian worldview, how the Christian sort of processes all of the things that are around us. Our worldview is the basic assumptions that we have about everything that's around us. So tonight, we're sort of winding this down. Tonight, I'd like to talk about how Christians process the whole notion of art and culture and human expression. And sometimes that takes the form of literature, sometimes it takes the form of architecture, but just kind of all kinds of human expression. This is such an interesting topic, and I'll send you a copy of the PowerPoints that we're using tonight, but I ran across a really interesting article that talks about the importance of our worldview and how we're going to think about things. It's from a political website that I follow. It's The Federalist. And it struck my attention because the title of it was, "Why Are So Many Kids Rejecting Christianity?" And so I read the article and I thought, well, I just want to pass that along. So here's a link. You can open that article a little bit later and just read it. Just think about it. It's good thinking. This notion of a Christian and how he ought to respond to art and humanities and literature and architecture, all of those things, this is not as much of a big deal today as it has been at times in the past. You're all probably aware that during certain periods in England's history that they stopped all theater. They stopped any kind of performance art at all, especially during the period of when Cromwell was the leader of the English. Then they slowly reintroduced some plays, but the plays, in order to be performed, had to be what they call passion plays. It had to be, in essence, a play that told a biblical story. Because if it didn't tell a biblical story, and I'm not talking about having a Christ figure in the play, it had to be explicitly the recorded word about a particular event from the Bible. And that was the only kind of theater that they thought was acceptable, because they wanted to avoid anything that was just intended to create pleasure in people that experience it. And that's really what theater and entertainment and art, that's really what that does. It all is intended to create pleasure. Now, their response to that was, we shouldn't be participating in that. In the extreme, that's monasticism. You leave every creature comfort behind and you move into a monastery. You spend all of your day, every day, reading only the Bible. You sleep on maybe a straw mat. Maybe you sleep, in extreme cases, just on the cold earth. But anything that exists for the purpose of just pure human pleasure is done away with. It's forsaken. And the theory is that if you can get rid of all of that, then that will draw you closer to God. And then there's the other extreme, which is anything that's done in order to praise God of any kind, no matter what it's like, if it's done for the purpose of praising God, then it's all right for Christians to be participating in that kind of entertainment. And in the extreme, that can be things that we would consider vile, that we would consider profane. But because it's, well, devoted to God, then that makes it okay. Now, I should also point out that during the Reformation in England, a lot of the beautiful art that had been done and was in churches was destroyed, because they wanted to put the emphasis on the word. And you could have beautiful buildings, but they were devoid of any kind of decoration at all. Some of the people that had made those decorations, that had done those beautiful, I mean, absolutely beautiful carvings in some of those cathedrals in Europe, did it for the purpose of praising and honoring God, and so they never signed it. So many of the altarpieces that we look at today and we say, those are fantastic. I can't imagine the work that went into that. They're unsigned. We know sometimes that they were done by very famous artists, but at no point did they ever sign them. Now, sometimes they kind of played a little bit of a game, and they would include their own likeness in the imagery that's in the art that they were making. But this question of how we view art has been at times a very divisive kind of question. Today, I think, instead of that kind of question, we're more likely to say, is it okay for me to read books that have profanity, that have vulgar language in them? And I have in some ways answered that question for myself, because I say, well, you know, that is the way people talk. Every one of us that works in the workplace is sometimes shocked by the kinds of language that people use, and they just don't perceive it as being vulgar. The kinds of things that they talk about are what I would consider vulgar. So for me to say, yes, I'm going to watch this movie, and this movie has profanity in it, it's not, in my mind, profanity that's included just for the purpose of including profanity. In other words, it's not gratuitous violence or gratuitous profanity, but that they're just, when two guys are walking down the street talking to each other, they talk the way that people normally talk. And music is even worse. Now, I have an advantage. I can't figure out what the words to most music are. But a lot of music has a lot of profanity in it. And we have to ask ourselves, am I going to listen to it? Am I going to read books? Am I going to watch movies? Am I going to watch TV? When these kinds of things are in those media. And I have to ask, what about beautiful art forms that have a message? You know, the nudes that were done. I look at Michelangelo's David, and I think that he's not intending it to somehow address or appeal to the purient interests that sometimes people have. He's amazed at the beauty of the human body. And he sculpted such an anatomically correct human body with all the musculature and the, just looking at the hands, they're beautiful hands. So it's a nude. Should I be looking at that? Or should I be like the Catholic Church at one time or another has placed a fig leaf on Michelangelo's David to cover up the parts that they didn't approve of? And, you know, what about sports? Some people would say, I'm not going to participate in sports because if I'm a runner, I wear this skin tight, very revealing uniform or leotard of some kind, and I can't participate in that. And that has caused in our day some great angst for people who are competing who are from Muslim countries. The fact that they wear this skin tight leotard is a real scandal for them. I'm pretty sure that they're wearing that skin-tight leotard not for any kind of sexual interest. They're just doing it because if they had flappy sweatshirts on, they couldn't run as fast. So how does a Christian kind of approach all of these things? Should I stay up to date on trends in art? And I must tell you, a lot of the art that's produced today, to me, doesn't hold an interest. I just don't like the art. Should I reject all forms of art when there is some sense in which it portrays things that are just vulgar? And I don't know the answer to all of these things. Should I let my kids watch Golden Girls? That was the thing when my kids were growing up. My kids couldn't watch Golden Girls because the content of the show, I felt like, was ungodly. I watched Golden Girls. And I'm not sure whether that was a good idea or not. Does anybody else struggle with those kinds of questions?
Yeah, every day. I spend a lot of time driving in the truck every day, and I feel like I'd go nuts if I didn't listen to something. And it's almost like I have to hear the bad song or the songs with profanity in it or things I don't want to hear before, so that next time I know, oh, I'm not going to listen to that song. But, you know, it seems like some days I end up flipping through the channels more than I do listening to anything. It's just sitting there, you know, driving, clicking all the 8 different channels. It's hard. And then the same thing with TV, you know, you only with work and everything, you might be able to get one episode in, but even finding a halfway decent show without, you know, anything bad in it is tough.
Yeah, Kim and I we got really interested in Downton Abbey largely because it didn't contain overt sex scenes. You kind of knew, but it wasn't just right out there. And we could, I felt like I could defend it. I knew that was going on, but I could defend it because it wasn't overt. And so much of what's on TV is just, it's overt. You know, Kim and I love watching The Big Bang Theory. And that's about as dirty a show as you can think of when you get right down to it. You kind of have to let the dirty parts just roll off. This is kind of my approach. I let the dirty parts roll off because I hear it all the time. I let the dirty parts roll off and I laugh at the funny stuff. And there really is quite a bit that's funny about that show. Anybody else?
Well, the problem is when we justify it like that, we desensitize ourselves to it. And it becomes more and more acceptable. And we aren't shocked by it anymore. So I think we always have to be on guard. It's very difficult in our culture, but I don't think that that's different than any other generation. Every generation's had it. and sometimes I think we have responded so far, like, you know, getting rid of all of the famous art and all of that because we think we have to go that direction to that extreme. But then the other extreme is that we desensitize ourselves. And we're not on guard and we're not alert to it anymore. And it becomes acceptable. An example of that is when we lived in Alaska, of course, people, you know, don't walk around in skimpy clothes like they do in Southern California. Well, when we would go back and visit in Southern California, I thought, well, these people are so immodest. This is terrible walking around the way that they're dressed and scantily clad. And because I wasn't accustomed to seeing that. And then when we moved back to California, I became more and more accustomed to it and more desensitized to it. And it didn't shock me anymore. And people could walk around, you know, in swimsuits and next to nothing. And it wouldn't shock me anymore. So I think we have to be on guard and not justify things to the point where we are desensitized.
I went to see a movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And I love the music in it. And there is some bad words in there, apparently, but I didn't even hear them because I heard them growing up because it was in my family. But I didn't even know there was bad language until somebody told me. I wouldn't go to that movie. It has all this. And I thought, I didn't hear that. I just heard the funny parts where the guy thought that the frog was somebody embodied in the frog. And then there were little girls going around in the back of trucks singing gospel music. And I remember sort of doing that myself. Just, you know, we would sing out like that. And but it just went over my head. What's the one with the bandit? Now that one got to me too, because it had a certain phrase in there that I had heard all of my life. And I have to say, it came back. I wasn't even thinking about it. And I sure heard that one. Some things just get you. If you have talking about scantily clad people, Eugene is one of the worst places there are, I think. So, but we do desensitize ourselves to a lot of that.
And I think that's a danger. Yeah.
Dean, years ago, we watched Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Although there was language in it, if you really wanted to see what these men went through, you had to put up with a little of it. But it wasn't overbearing. But then next year or so, Paul Newman was in one, I think it was called The Verdict. And after the second guy walked in there, the second time that he came in with all of the language that he was doing, we got up and walked out of the theater. One of the biggest problems I have if I watch a show and I'm not paying attention is then all of a sudden it runs through my head again. Sometimes it might even run out my mouth. And so you really have to watch disregarding it, because garbage in and garbage out.
Exactly.
Well, I know that Eldon and I wouldn't go to a movie that was rated R, and we thought that. But then they started coming out with even kids shows that you wouldn't go to. You know, it just gets worse.
That's what happens. We get a little bit closer and a little bit closer and a little bit closer to it until we don't think anything about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Try taking these girls to shop for a prom dress. And you sit there and you watch some of these girls come out in things that you think, oh, my goodness. And then you try to find one that's decent, and what's decent, what I might consider decent now for them to wear was not decent 10 years ago when I think about it.
I grew up with my dad. My dad and three or four brothers, we cut wood for a living. And my mom, she did not put up with foul language. But every once in a while, out back of the house, Dad would hit his finger with a hammer or whatever, working on the wood mill. And he'd let out a big bad word, you know, and he'd, under his breath, he'd say, oh, my goodness. Mom's going to be out the back door. Sure enough, about 30 seconds, here's Mom on the back porch pointing her finger at Dad. And I don't use it to this day. I have caught myself, but it has come out, but I don't allow it. I don't stay around it. And if somebody comes in McDonald's using that word, I'll tell them, would they please show a little respect. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You know, I had three of my four children here yesterday to check on me, and I was telling them there are several actors that I really like, but they are so foul-mouthed in their movies. And I have not virgin ears nor tongue, unfortunately. And even when the movies are bleeping, you tend to fill in what they're saying. And so I told them, I've decided I'm not going to watch because I don't want to do the fill-ins, you know. I just, I choose not to do that anymore. I don't think that's a nice thing for me to be doing. So, unfortunately, I don't get to watch these good actors that I like.
Yeah, we were going to watch 1883 and Yellowstone, and 2 minutes in it, we just turned it off. It was just disgusting. So people don't actually talk that way.
The hardest things, I think, is difficult, and you see it going down the street, or, I mean, you hear it going down the street or anywhere. People use God's name in vain so much. They don't even think about what they're saying. And it almost hurts me to hear them do that. And it always has.
It makes me angry when I hear them do it.
Yes, me too. And I talk to my friends about it because they go, oh my, you know. And I said, don't talk like that. You're using God's name in vain. And it just goes right over their head.
Yep. It's even in literature now, and they use the initials rather than the words, and to me that's just it's sad,
very sad.
Yes, that happens at my daughter's house, and she says, "Oh, Dad, that's just the way they talk these days." And I say, "Yeah, well." You won't see me over here anymore, and I've seen them twice, my grandkids, in the last year, and it's sad, you know, but I just don't allow that. I told them all off of over there one day, and I ain't been back since but once or twice, and it's a sad thing, but they come over occasionally, and they don't use it when they're here. But they use those initials like you were talking about there. They don't say the word. You know, the youngest one, she's 8, and the one.
Yeah,
the
we have to be careful with those euphemisms.
Sorry,
we have to be careful with those euphemisms too.
Yes, you know,
we substitute things for the words, and we also then become desensitized to that, and. You know, there are so many euphemisms that are so ingrained in us, we don't really often realize where they came from. I have a story that happened many years ago. I'm a big Angels fan. I love Angels baseball. And I was in Southern California, and they were running an ad on the radio. And it was basically the story was two teenage girls sitting in the stands at a game, and they're talking about how great it is to be there. And the players, and they kept using, oh my, and they were using the Lord's name in vain. I got so angry listening to that ad that when I got to work, I actually took some time and I called the marketing director because I'd heard it on the way to work. I called the marketing director of the Angels organization, and I got him on the phone and I told him how offensive that was. And he said, "Well, ma'am," he said, "that's the way teenage girls talk." And I said, "But as a Christian, we can't take the Lord's name in vain." He said, "Ma'am, I'm a Christian." And I said, "And you approved that to go out on the air?" And he said, "Yes, because that's the way teenage girls talk." And I said, "Well, as long as Christians like us are willing to promote that, they're going to continue to talk that way." And he said, he took a deep breath, and then he said, "You've convicted me, but I'm not sure I can get it off the air because of your phone call." And I said, "Well, that's your call. That's up to you. But I needed to let you know how offensive this is." And so anyway, I don't know that he told me he wasn't going to take it off the air, that they'd already paid for the airtime and they weren't going to do it. And I said, "Okay, I mean, what can I do?" And, but I never heard it again. Now, it could be that I just didn't hear it when it played, but I never heard that ad again. So sometimes I think as Christians, we need to take a stand. And I've called people down before. I've said, "You know what? That kind of language isn't appropriate. Not appropriate in this setting, not appropriate anytime."
Exactly.
Well, it was between him and God, Kim, and I think God took care of it for you.
It very, very well could be. And he was very apologetic, and he said, on a personal level, I agree with you, and I'm so sorry, and now I regret that I approved that copy. I should not have approved it, but we've already paid for the airtime. It's already going out. I can't pull it back. And I said, well, that's up to you. I said, I'm sure you've got the power to do that. And then I left it. I just couldn't go any further. I just think that we have to take a stand sometimes.
I've known people that they think that that's cleaning up their language because they don't use the real bad words as they are thinking. They clean it up by just using God. Oh, my God, they say, you know, I think that they're cleaning up their language somewhat because I've talked for like quite a while and visiting with these people. And they just use that one word. And, I think they go back whenever you're not there to the worst ones. So, you know, it's like they everyone else does that. So they're just doing like they do. It's terrible. I don't like it either.
Yeah. When I was much younger, I was umpiring Little League ball games, and I threw a kid out of a game for profanity. You're not supposed to use profanity in Little League. And this kid got thrown out at second, and he go hog wild, and I threw him out of the game. And he looked at me and said, what did I say? He really didn't. Several of you have said he cleaned up his language. He didn't use the bad words. He thought he cleaned it up. And I still wound up throwing him out of the game. I got a stern talking to from the folks that ran Little League about what was acceptable and what was not acceptable. But I really struck me that that's become so common in our language. And I think several people have made that point.
My granddaughter. She is an aide at school here, and Michelle's oldest girl, and she says she hears things like that all the time. And she talks to the children. She has a really good way about her. But they hear, well, Mom and Dad say it.
Mm-hmm.
I hear Mom and Dad. I learn, you know, and that they learn it at home. But she still tells them that. That's not, you know, I mean, I'm real proud of the fact that she really tries to help them out on the playground.
Yeah.
It's not my job to go up to people who aren't Christians, who aren't in my conversation or in my sphere, and get in their face and tell them how they should speak. But like Wes says, if you have them come to your house, they need to know that that's not acceptable. And it's means you have to sit down, and you need to sit down in private. You can't do it when you can't shame them in front of a whole bunch of other people. You need to talk to them in private so that they understand where you're coming from. And I think sometimes when you say that you can't take the Lord's name in vain, I don't think maybe they even understand that it's disrespecting the God who created the whole world. And you have to put it into some different words so that maybe they understand.
Well, I had two things that really got me. I worked at yard duty at the school, and it was kindergarten to middle school. And I would hear them say that, and I put my hands over my ear and said, oh, don't say that. That hurts my ears. And they actually cleaned it up for me because they had enough respect, and they were very careful not to do that. But then I had another friend who used to use God's name in vain, and I said, why would you want God to damn somebody? That's awful. And so I made my point as well as I could, and they didn't use it around me anymore because they do have respect for you, the ones that are your friends, and they can control it. So anyway, I thought it was really good for the little kids to do that because it was so common with them. They just did that. So anyway.
And I think Carol makes a really good point. I don't have to get up in the face of somebody that's just walking down the street. But if you're going to talk to me, if you're going to be in my house, then I have the right to set the rules. And I have the right, if you want to address me, I have the right to say, I don't respond to that sort of thing.
I had a lot of trouble with euphemism. I didn't even know that. And we finally got a lesson on it. And I thought, wow, what have I been doing all these years when we were little and young? And it's an expression that means the same thing when you get right down to it and think about it. But it was hard for me to break because it was in part of our language. So gets easier all the time.
You know, my mom, she wouldn't allow that cussing, but she would say, oh, Lordy, Lordy. You know, she said, Lord, have mercy, and stuff like that. And I never thought about that. Is that a euphemism or what would you call that? My dear old mom took me to church every Sunday. I'd say, what can I say? I just don't know that. I think it was in a form of like a big deal, like a, you know, Lordy, Lordy, look at that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how to, but I don't think it wouldn't be a good thing. I'm not really sure about that. What do you think?
Many times I think when we talk about euphemisms, people use certain words and certain euphemisms and they have no idea what it means. They just kind of repeat it. Like somebody said that people that use Jiminy Cricket in common language, that's a euphemism. They don't want to say Jesus Christ, so they say Jiminy Cricket. And I have a feeling that there are a lot of people that have no idea that that's what they're saying. They just heard it repeated over and over again, and they say Jiminy Cricket. Now that, you know, maybe the point of that is that it's, well, something like Paul said, stay away from foolish jesting. Think about what you're saying and don't use a word if you don't know what it means. But, Wes, I think a lot of times people, like your mom, probably said, Lordy, Lordy, that she wasn't intending to be cussing, wasn't intending to take the Lord's name in vain.
No, not at all.
But it may have started out that way and it becomes something else. It's kind of like if you live in the South, people say, oh, bless her heart. What that means is that poor girl is just so dumb she needs all the help she can get. But
stop that, Jen. I say that all the time. Stop it. I say it to you all the time.
Bless her.
She said that to me.
One of my nieces came back from the South from going to school down there, and she told her dad, said, those people can say the meanest things about people. And it said, as long as you end it with, oh, bless her heart, then it was okay.
Oh, my goodness. I've never heard that before.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think what we've concluded is making decisions about how we're going to respond to these kinds of things is not easy. And every one of us has to make a decision on our own. And different people may make different decisions. You may decide that because of all the filth that's associated with it, I'm not going to watch Disney anymore. Did anybody see the interview that the head of Disney content did just recently?
I heard about it.
Yeah, she said that 50% of Disney characters, Disney lead characters, are, if she has anything to say about it, going to be lesbians or some sort of member of the LGBTQ alphabet community. And I know a lot of people who have said, I am not going to watch Disney anymore.
All right.
And we're not going to go to Disneyland because they took out boys and girls, moms and dads. They don't address you that way anymore. And other people will say, no, we're going to go to Disney because that's the cleanest kind of entertainment that we can think of. So it's not easy.
Disney's been going down this slippery slope for a long time. I mean, I remember when Herbie the Car was on, and I think that was all pretty clean, but he was running all the red lights. I mean, you know, doing all these things that are wrong. Disney lost me a long time ago.
If Disney was still here, Walt Disney, that wouldn't be happening.
He'd have a fit, wouldn't he, Wes?
He would have a fit. That just wouldn't be happening, is all there is to it. It would. I just know it.
Well, I hope you're right. But it does seem like that these questions are becoming harder and harder for us to deal with, harder and harder for us to answer. And I have to tell you, at one point, I mean, I really wanted to just gather up. The world was so perverse. I was going to just gather up my family and go buy an island somewhere, go build a house on the island, and then burn the bridge that gets you to the island. I wanted so desperately to protect my kids from what I perceive to be just pervasive evil.
And they have to learn to deal with it.
Yeah, I didn't do it. And Jimmy makes a point. I know people who would not send their kids to school, to public school, largely because they did not want them to ever hear this language.
Right.
Now, there are other people who felt like they could do just as good a job educating their children, and they chose to educate their children because they chose to include some things in their education. But I think Jenny made a good point. If you so insulate your kids that they never hear this kind of thing, you don't have an opportunity to explain to them that this is not the way that we talk because we're different. This is not the kind of thing that we say because we're different.
I don't know how you feel about John Wayne. I've watched that and everything, and I don't remember him ever saying a bad word. But I saw one, and he said a cuss word. I thought I was going to fall on the floor. I've never heard him say that. It was awful.
I was going to say one of the things that cuss words, especially ones that are aimed at people, is they devalue people. They devalue God. In order to make them feel better because they're angry at somebody.
Mom, I hate you.
You know, we've heard it said that this is why it's so difficult. As Christians, we're to live in the world, but we're not of the world. And yes, we have to interact in the world, and that's going to affect us. But I think, Dean, you referenced something that Paul said in Ephesians, and I'd like to read that, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
It says, this is chapter 5, "Be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly beloved children, and live a life of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. But among you, there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or greed or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. Nor should there be any obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving. For of this you can be sure, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a man is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words," which is, I think, what we're talking about. "For because of such things, God's wrath comes on those who are disobedient. Therefore, do not be partners with them." And I feel like that's what we're talking about. And I think Paul's warning is critical here.
Well, as you can see, there are several slides that are left to go. We were going to talk about the biblical information, but this discussion, I think, is worthwhile. And so we'll talk about the biblical information next week. But we've set the stage. And Kim, I think, introduced that very well. You know, somebody said that profanity is the effort of a small mind to express itself forcefully. And I think that may, in large part, be true.
I agree.
People cuss and swear because they can't figure out any other way to express themselves.
Makes them look bigger or something.
Yeah, and when you get right down to it, it kind of makes you look foolish when it's as cold as and as hot as and it's as tough as and it's as easy as. Don't you know any other words?
I have to tell a story about my son, because he was working on the car or something and he hit his finger and he said, "Oh, bad word, bad word." And that's kind of the same thing. It was bad to him, I suppose, the word was. But you can just substitute something for it, and you're still thinking the same thing in your mind, kind of.
Yeah, my little sister says, "Oh, cuss."
Uh-huh. But there's a point to that. When a person hits their thumb, the person doesn't want to get... doesn't yell and scream, and they don't want to cry, so they substitute a cuss word. But when somebody just knows that they need to express something, but they don't want to say something that means something else, that is appropriate to say something like that. For a little while after I was a Christian, I said didymus because it's dynamite, because my head was exploding. But I didn't mean, I had somebody who said, well, when I say peanut butter, this is what I mean. And it's like, no, I was saying that instead of saying the other to replace that so that I could get angry correctly, not incorrectly.
Yeah.
My uncle went shopping with his wife, and they got out of the car downtown, and he gets out on the driver's side, and he opens the door and gets out, and he's looking down at the shops, and he hooks his thumb over the top of the door and shuts the door on his hand. And man, the air turned blue all around him, and he was, and then he turned around and looked, and there was a lady next door to him in the car, sitting in the car. So she had to go through all that filthy talk because he mashed his thumb.
Yeah, we'd be better off saying plainly. That hurts really bad.
Yeah.
So
when Randy was a little boy, around three, he got in the habit of saying, "You stupid." And my brother Jim was there one time, and he said, "Susan, don't let him say that." And I said, "Well, what do you want him to say?" He said, "Tell him something else to say in place of that." And I said, "Well, what should I tell him to say?" He said, "Well, tell him to say, oh, you turkey." And I told Randy that. And the next time he got exasperated, he said, "Oh, you gobble, gobble." He couldn't remember the word Jim told him to say.
Yeah. Or you can do like I do, and I'm jumping up and down, holding my thumb, saying, "Ow, ow, 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 ow." Sound like a dog barking.
And I say, "Oh, I really want to do that." Not.
Well,
I mashed my thumb, and while it was turning blue, I decided that, wow, I made it. And I watched this thumb, my nail turn blue underneath, and I didn't say one cuss word. And
let's also not forget, though, that we have an example in Jesus Christ of a man who spent a lot of his time with the people that we're talking about, with the prostitutes and with the publicans and with those things. There's not an issue with that, and letting our light shine and choosing not to use those words and being around people. I spend a lot of time at work around people who take the Lord's name in vain all the time. They know I don't approve of it. That really hasn't changed their attitude, but they'll never hear it come out of my mouth. So we can't forget that we can be a huge influence on other people just by being an example. And that's what we're supposed to do. And I think that's part of living in the world, but not of the world, is it's really hard to get away from all of the stuff that's out there. It really is. But we can't forget what kind of an influence we can be on somebody who doesn't know God and doesn't have that influence in their life. And if we're not, you know, if we're making an effort to not be around those people, then they're never going to see the good influence. So that's where we can let our light shine.
Yeah, it's amazing sometimes how the influence that you can be just being yourself and not allowing those kinds of words and behavior, you know, to control you. They become people who respect that.
True. Well, we're out of time.
Thanks for letting me mouth off, Gene.
That's okay. You know, we all have to figure out how we're going to deal with these things. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in listening to the way that we've tried to find a way to deal with it.